no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show, 60 minutes of radio drama brought to you every Tuesday at RelicRadio.com. We'll begin this week with Theater 5, their story from March 26, 1965, titled The Widow. After that, it's High Death from The Whistler, his story from March 11th, 1951.
Theater 5 presents The Widow.
If it's you, as you say, come in. Come in. Why are you standing there with that odd look on your face?
Because I'm so amazed and disconcerted. Mama, who else could possibly be knocking at your bedroom door? Did you think it was Andrew? Or that boy downstairs? He's still waiting, you know. Mama, you know that. Oh, truly, you're the most exasperating person. Mama, that boy is sitting down there in the kitchen drinking his fifth cup of coffee. I'm exhausted talking to him. I can't think of another civilized thing to say. Truly, Mama, he's beginning to look at me oddly. He wants his money, and he wants it now, so he can leave before dark or before the snow starts again. Mama?
Yes, Emily?
If you don't stop sewing this instant, I shall snatch up the needle and stick it into you.
Oh, yeah, come give me a kiss.
Oh, Mama. Mama, you're impossible. How can you be so calm? I told you, he's waiting. We've got to do it now.
If you tell me that once more, I'll stick the needle into you. Goodness, that's better. I've been waiting to hear you laugh. You've been much too serious today and fretful besides. Now get me my jewel box. We'll count out his money. Emily, what is it now? Why are you staring out that window?
Mama, look.
At what? I don't see a thing. Oh, yes. Three icicles hanging from the eaves.
How clever of you to notice. Mama, you are my sweet dear and my angel besides. Aren't they pretty? Do you remember? I used to eat them when little. I should like to eat one now. Oh, Mama, may I? Do you suppose I could? It would make me feel so much better. I believe I could reach the little one. Here, help me open the window.
That window doesn't open. I remember Andrew told me the sash cord is broken.
Oh, Andrew. When I think of him, I get another of my graveyard feelings. But never mind that. Look at my breath in the window. Shall I draw a picture with my finger? I know. A heart. There. And a sweet little message. I love Mama.
Hello? Hello, sir. You there, Miss Ann?
It's him, Mama. Don't you see?
Well, then, fetch my jewel box from the bureau. We'll be right down, young man.
Don't get me wrong. I'll take it. It just seems that $20 is an awful lot of money for sweeping out the cellar and carrying in some wood. I didn't expect that much.
You feel you didn't earn it?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, well, then, you can. We have one more chore before you leave. The only important one, really. but we were afraid to ask you.
Oh, what's that, ma'am? Well, what is it?
Oh, dear. You tell him, Mammy Lou.
I can't. I know we won't do it. Oh, Mama, I'm going to cry.
Well, I'll do anything, ma'am. You've been mighty generous.
Well, it's Herman.
He's our dog. He's 15 years old, truly. And lame and almost blind in both eyes.
Oh, where is he? I didn't see him around.
He's tied up in the barn. We carried him out this morning with his blankets and his funny old bone. He's just too sickly and suffering to keep in the house any longer. We can't bear it. Why, last night, Emmy Lou nearly cried her eyes out, listening to him whimper. Poor Herman, dear Herman.
Sweet Herman.
He's suffering so. It would be truly a considerate kindness if you...
I see.
Emmy Lou won't even try. And every time I go out with a shotgun, well, he knows it's me. And sick as he is, that sad little tail starts to wag.
Oh, don't.
No, Emmy Lou.
Well, I've never killed a dog.
It's not killing at all, young man.
It's blessed mercy.
Hand him the shotgun, Emmy Lou. And then get our coats from the closet and one of the big oil lamps so we can show him the way.
Well, hold on. Just a minute. I've never used one of these things before. What do I do?
Oh, you city boys. You just hold it firmly. That's right. It's already cocked. Then all you do is when you find Herman is to put the barrel behind his ear and pull the trigger.
Do two things at once, Mama. The door is stuck.
Give me the lamp, silly. No, young man. You just hold the shotgun. Emmy Lou will manage.
Dear, it's the snowdrift against the door, but... There, look. I think we can just squeeze through. Mama, you go first with the lamp.
Let's get this over with, huh?
Indeed. Here, you need the lamp. Where is he, Emmy Lou? Where is Herman?
Don't you remember? To the right, in the far corner by the old butter churn.
Well, say, aren't you coming? Hey, look, do I have to go alone? What's she laughing for?
She's not laughing, young man. She's crying. She's hysterical. Can't you tell? Go quickly. The far corner. Get it done. Do it now.
Miss Ames, you, Emmy Lou. There isn't any dog over there like you said. There's a body. A man lying dead. I saw a round hole in his head as big as a quarter. And blood frozen solid. Someone shot him. And he's dead.
A man?
A dead man? Mama, is that what he said?
Yes.
In our barn?
Yes. What else? We're not in China or South Africa. We're standing right here in the middle of our barn.
Why are you so cranky and short-tempered? I declare, I've put up with a lot today.
Well, there are times, Emmy Lou, when you do grate on a body's nerves. When someone says to you, a dead man... What is the use of your repeating it right after he said it? That's one of your faults, as I've told you often. Making people repeat themselves when you heard them plain as day. Emmy Lou?
Well, I don't know. I can't rightly see his face. The head is turned to one side. Will you please stop pushing me that way, Ma? It's very annoying.
Well, move closer. What's the matter with you? Are you afraid to look at a corpse?
Of course not. Hold up the lamp. There, that's better. Well, I do believe it's Andrew. In his blue corduroy jacket. I declare it is Andrew.
Who's Andrew?
Someone you know?
He's Emmy Lou's husband, of course. Or should I say, he was Emmy Lou's husband. I imagine the past tense is more appropriate now. Well, we were just wondering why we hadn't seen him all day. He is dead.
Oh, yes. And frozen besides. Touch his leg with your foot, Mama, just to see.
Well, do move a bit. The butter churn is sticking in my ribs. Good heavens.
What?
He's solid as stone. We could stand him up like an ironing board if we had a mind to. Is that truly a bullet hole in his head?
It certainly is, with burn marks and frozen blood. Mama, give me a hand. Step over here. Do you see? Look at Andrew's eyes. They're staring straight at us, as beady and mean as ever. Oh, dear, I confess I'm glad he's dead, aren't you? I'm just so pleasantly relieved. Though I do wonder who could have, done such a dreadful thing.
What? Why are you looking at me?
At you? Oh, I'm not. Perhaps I'm looking through you. I'm still dazed, you understand. A sudden and violent death like this is bound to affect one's nerves. I just can't get over it. Can you, Mama?
Indeed I can't. I'm just that surprised. Truly, the oddest things do happen. Isn't that true, young man?
His name is Tom, Mama. Tom. It's so tiresome hearing you say young man all the time.
Oh, very well, Tom, then. Just think, this morning, you were on your way to California hitchhiking. And because of the storm, you stopped by our house.
And while you waited for the snow to stop, we hired you to do a few chores.
And look at you now, standing in our barn with a shotgun in your hand and a dead man at your feet. Did you ever dream that could happen?
No, ma'am, I guess I never did. I sure never did.
One never knows quite what will happen next, does one?
No, ma'am. Life is sure full of surprises, if that's what you're getting at. I mean, I'm real sorry about your husband, ma'am, Emmy Lou, about his being shot and all. But even so, that is, should we be standing around talking like this? Don't you think, hadn't you ought to telephone the police?
The police? Oh, goodness, no. We just call it Lamb.
Mama, Lamb is the police.
Why, so he is. I just never think of him that way. He's our local sheriff, Tom. I've known him, oh, since he was a tiny boy. He grew up with my daughter. In fact, I do believe he's always been a mite bit sweet on Emmy Lou. And now that she's a widow... Sarah? Sarah?
Yes, Miss Ames?
What's the trouble now?
What?
I said, what's the trouble? Why don't you connect me?
Ma'am, I can hardly hear you. Is something wrong with the phone?
No, it's just that I don't want someone to hear what I'm saying. Who's Lem talking to?
Well, as usual, it's his sister, ma'am. They're still going on about that sick hog of hers.
Then you butt right in and tell him I'm here. I've got something more important to discuss than a sick hog. Andrew is dead.
Is that right? I bet you and Emmy Lou hung up the flag.
Don't you get fresh with me, Miss Sarah Ann Jones. Now you connect me right away. You hear? Where's Lamb now? Do you see him?
Yes.
Well, don't keep it a secret, Emmy Lou.
Oh, Mama, he'll be here in a minute. Truly, you're the most curious person. Haven't you noticed that, Tom? I declare she can't rest at all until she knows every detail of a Bobby's action. Why don't you come to the window and see for yourself?
Because someone has to make fresh coffee, and apparently I've been voted most likely to succeed. Tom, you haven't eaten your pie.
No, ma'am. I don't think I can.
Well, do try. Is he out in the barn yet?
I see a searchlight coming up the path. I can see him brushing himself off.
Don't you track into that snow in here, Lem Wheeler. You stomp off those boots.
Ah. Oh, holy McGee, that snow's starting all over again, worse than ever. And I ain't got chains in my tires, so ladies, if I want to get back to town at all, I'd better make this fast. How are you, Emma Lou?
Oh, just fine. Fine, Lem, considering.
Did you see him?
Did I see who?
Why, Andrew, of course.
Miss Ames, I've been out in that deep freeze of a barn for the last half hour. I seen him all right, and I seen that hole in his head. Truth is, I seen all that I need to see, and maybe it might bid more. Is this the fella here? I hear you confess.
What?
Now, it's no use getting all riled up again. Miss Ames told me the whole story.
What story? Wait a minute. Oh, Emmy Lou, Miss Ames, you didn't tell the sheriff here. You didn't say that I... Oh, no.
Now look, son, he was one mean cuss, and nobody's exactly broken up because he's dead. Least of all, Emmy Lou here.
But it's not true. You don't understand.
I understand that it must be like Miss Ames says. You and Andrew had a fight over money he owed you for doing some chores, and when you struggled for the shotgun, bang, it went off.
And he came running back in the house as green as a cucumber, didn't he, Emmy Lou? And he confessed right off.
There's the shotgun with his fingerprints all over it.
Isn't that true, son? Aren't your fingerprints on the gun? It's easy enough to prove.
Yes, yes, my fingerprints are there all right, but only because they gave me the gun. They wanted me to kill old Herman.
Who, son? Who?
Their dog. Their sick old dog. Old Herman.
Herman?
Whatever is he talking about?
They said he was lame, blind, sick. They said he...
Yeah, son, I'm listening.
Lem, you know we never had a dog.
Herman. Oh, well, dear, well, even if I had a dog, I wouldn't name him that. I prefer dogs with elegant names. Roderick.
Will you shut up? Shut up, both of you. Don't you realize you've accused me of murder? Of killing a man?
Now, son. If you get violent, I'll have to handcuff you, and I don't want to do that. You're too nice a lad. Just you behave, and we'll get along fine. Listen to that wind. It's getting worse by the minute. So, by your leave, ladies, I think we better go now. Hey, you, son. Get into your coat while I wrap up this shotgun here. I want to be careful so as not to smear the fingerprints.
Where are they now?
Well, they're still standing by the steps talking. Goodness, it is snowing hard. Mama, come see.
No, I want to clear up these dishes. I can't abide an untidy sink. What are they doing now?
Mama, I just told you. They're just... Oh, no. Lem is coming back. Mama, Lem is coming back.
Yes, Lem? What is it? You forget something?
No, ma'am, I didn't. I just came back to remind you that I wasn't born yesterday. That boy didn't do no shooting. He didn't kill Andrew. You did, Miss Ames, or you, Emmy Lou. And you know how I know? Because that corpse in the barn is frozen solid. Well, he's frozen solider than a rock. And to freeze like that, ladies, he's been there 3-4 days, maybe as long as a week. So that boy couldn't have done it. Eh, Miss Ames?
Well, now, if you believe that, Lem Wheeler, why aren't you taking us along? Why are you taking that boy?
I'm glad you asked, ma'am. Truth is, I'll be back for you two in the morning. Wouldn't dream of taking you out on a bad night like this. And the boy? Well, I figure he'd be much safer in jail than spending the night here with you two. Good night, ladies. See you in the morning.
Well, that surely was an odd twist to events. So unexpectedly like. I declare it gives me the strangest feeling.
Mama, what did Lem mean, saying Tom would be safer in jail than spending the night here with us?
Well, I can't say I know exactly. Truly, that was an odd thing to say. But then, Lem Wheeler was always a bit peculiar in his thinking. Not quite there, if you know what I mean.
Oh, Mama, what a mean thing to say. Really, I do lose patience with you sometimes.
Well, it's true. and you won't own up to it because you're sweet on the man.
Mama! Well, what are you saying? Why, I can hardly believe my ears. Me, sweet on Lem Wheeler. Don't you realize I'm a widow? Why, it's hardly been a week since I put that bullet in Andrew's head. There's a proper period of mourning. Don't you know I must grieve?
Theater 5 has presented The Widow, written by Richard Lortz and directed by Ted Bell. In the cast, Alix Elias, Helen Carew, Larry Robinson, George Petrie, and Corey Knorr. Script editor, Jack C. Wilson. Original music by Alexander Vlastatsenko. Orchestra under the direction of Glenn Osser. Executive producer for Theater 5, Mr. Lee Bowman. We invite your comments. Write to Theater 5, New York 23, New York. That's Theater 5, New York 23, New York. This is Fred Foy speaking. This has been an ABC Radio Network production.
And now, stay tuned for the mystery program that is unique among all mystery programs. Because even when you know who's guilty, you always receive a startling surprise at the final curtain. In The Whistler.
The Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Yes, friends, it's time for The Whistler, rated by independent research the most popular West Coast program in radio history. And now, The Whistler's strange story. High Death.
There are strange paradoxes in the night. The night itself is a paradox. The same darkness that promises sleep and peace and a brighter tomorrow also offers wakeful torment, wild, disjointed thoughts that sometimes twist and turn until they fit into a pattern. And that pattern, born of night, is murder. Jim Mason woke with a start. The big room was flooded with moonlight. And for a moment, he blinked dazedly at the unfamiliar surroundings. He stared for a moment through the huge plate glass windows, saw the towering snow-capped peaks resplendent in the moon-washed night. And then he looked down at Laura, his wife, lying beside him, and he realized what had wakened him. Laura was moaning in her sleep. Suddenly, she jerked convulsively, sat bolt upright in bed, her eyes wide and staring.
No, no, don't. Please, please don't. You'll kill me. You'll kill me.
Laura.
What? Jim, don't. Please don't do it.
Oh, what is it? What's wrong? I'm not going to hurt you.
Oh, I... Jim, what is it?
You must have been dreaming, Laura. A bad one.
Oh, just a dream. Oh, thank heaven. It's horrible, Jim. I was dreaming that...
That what?
Oh, it was nothing, really. It's so silly.
It doesn't sound so silly. Something about somebody killing you. What was it?
Well, I was climbing a mountain. I was very high. It seemed I was coming down a sheer wall of rock. I was using my rappel line. Suddenly, I felt something. I looked up.
Yes?
Somebody was cutting my rope with a knife. A big knife, very shiny. I begged him to stop, but he went right on cutting and laughing.
He? Who, Laura?
Jim, it was only a dream. Probably a result of that close call I had this afternoon. I guess I'll be talking about it in my sleep for nights and nights.
Who was cutting the rope, Laura? Who?
Jim, you know how dreams are. They don't mean anything. They never make sense. No sense at all.
Just a bad dream, Jim. You don't dare look for an explanation, do you? Because, as Laura says, dreams never make sense. But you're not quite sure, are you? Long after Laura goes back to sleep, you lie there, your mind reliving the past few days, the events that brought you here to this remote Swiss valley, to the sharp, gabled, and sprawling inn of Herr Schmidt that you told Laura and your close friends who are with you, Mona and Peter, so much about.
Willkommen, willkommen, Herr Jim. So long it is, yeah? 3 years, and so well you look.
Herr Schmidt, how are you?
Oh, this is your wife?
Yes, this is Laura.
Willkommen, Frau Mason.
Thank you.
You two and your friends are going to climb? That is good. Your father, he did not come, Herr Jim.
No, he did not come.
I'm sorry. I am so happy when I get your letter. Right away, I take it down to the village to Stefan. So he is happy, too.
Stefan? Is he still here, then? I was afraid that he...
Still here? But of course. Where else should he be? No one ever leaves here. Wait. Stefan! Stefan, come, Stefan! Here he comes.
Stefan! Stefan, it's good to see you again.
Jim, it is good to see you, too. Yeah, good.
Laura? Laura, this is Stefan. Stefan, this is my wife, Mrs. Mason. She's a climber you're going to be proud of.
I'm so glad to meet you, Stefan. Jim has told me so much about you. According to him, you are the finest of all alpine guides. I hope you'll guide for us.
Yeah, Frau Mason, I will guide for you.
A heartwarming reception, isn't it, Jim? Good talk and laughter, with nothing to foreshadow the dark tragedy that is to come. Just four very alive young people on a holiday. Your wife, Laura, yourself, and your two friends, Mona Williams and Peter Bennett. After a short visit, Herr Schmidt shows Mona to a room, Peter to his, and takes you and Laura to the room at the end of the hall. When you and Laura are alone, you turn to her.
Well, what do you think of it, Laura? Was I exaggerating?
No, you weren't. I love it, Jim. Everything. That enormous window, it's terrific. Or rather, the panorama's terrific.
Yeah. Look at those mountains. Here they look so smooth and soft, but up there close, there are ridges, crags, ledges, ice walls. And that big gray dome there to the right, see it?
Mm-hmm. I see it.
They call it Gray Cloud. Dad and I almost made it to the top, but a sudden storm licked us. You never know when a storm will hit up here, but when it does, it means trouble. Real trouble.
Yes, Jim, storms can be treacherous, can't they, when they strike suddenly, without warning. But there's no storm on the horizon now that you can see. Shortly before lunch, you meet Herr Schmidt coming out of the dining room. Laura and the others haven't come down yet.
Smells good, huh? Yeah, Herr Jim, this is herrings a lot and eggs with noodles, your father's favorite. Mm. I wish he could have come. He's not sick, I hope.
He is dead, Herr Schmidt.
Dead? Oh, I'm sorry. Very sorry, Herr Jim. Stefan, too, will be very sad. But in the letter you said nothing.
He died over a year ago.
Mm-hmm. You leave Herr Schmidt clucking sadly to himself and step out onto the terrace, stroll to the rear of the inn, stop suddenly. A few feet away, locked in a close embrace, are Peter and Mona. At that moment, Mona's eyes open and she stares straight into yours. And the storm you could not see strikes with full fury within you. You swing around and stalk back into the inn. After lunch, the four of you decide on a walk. You and Mona find yourselves paired off, with Peter and Laura, your wife, up the path, talking and laughing.
It's utterly beautiful, Jim. Jim? What is it, Jim?
Out there on the terrace, he's kissing you.
I thought that was all settled. Certainly a man has a perfect right to kiss the girl he's engaged to.
I can't give you up, I can't.
But you did. Remember?
I had no choice, you know that.
Yes, I guess I do. I think I always knew that you'd never marry me. I knew it for sure when Laura came along. Laura, with practically all the money in the world.
I tried working, didn't I? Didn't take long for me to find out I knew a lot more about spending money than making it.
Well, that was something, anyway. I never even knew about spending it.
You're learning now.
I'm not marrying Peter just for his money, Jim. I'm very fond of him. Maybe I'll learn to love him. I hope so.
You love me, Mona. You know you do.
Jim. Jim, please.
The only way I can ever have you is if Laura dies. And she's very healthy.
Don't talk like that, Jim. Don't ever talk like that.
You stalk along in sullen silence, Jim, too torn and furious to speak. And the path grows steeper. When you and Mona catch up with Laura and Peter, you find that they're on an open, scrubby slab of rock that hangs out over a sheer drop of at least 300 feet. Below, there's a jumble of rocks. Beyond that stretches the green valley, cut by a river winding serenely on its way.
Jim, Mona, it's a simply lovely view. Come see.
It is lovely. Look, you can see the inn.
Dad and I used to walk up here just to smoke and talk. Now, careful, that's a pretty steep drop. If you ever fell, they need a vacuum cleaner to find you. Laura, what are you doing? Come back off that ledge.
A beautiful flower. I'm going to get it.
She shouldn't be out on that narrow ledge if she should slip.
Laura, come back.
Nothing at all. I'll have it in a minute. Jim.
Laura!
You move quickly, Jim. In an instant, you're out on the small ledge that protrudes no more than a foot on the face of the wall. A section of it had crumbled under Laura's weight. You advance as far as you can, praying that the narrow ledge will hold. You carefully go down on one knee and jam your elbow into a crack for support.
Laura, I'm going to reach out my hand. Grip it with your right hand. Then with both hands. I'm going to pull you up slowly till you can find a toehold. Now, grab!
Oh, that was close. That was too close. Thank goodness you can move that fast, Jim. I was paralyzed myself.
Laura, are you all right?
Are you, Laura?
Oh, yes, quite all right. I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have. I guess I just didn't think. Oh, Jim, darling, if it hadn't been for you, I'd be dead now.
Now, back to the Whistler.
You lie there in bed, Jim, in the dead of night, wide awake, recalling today's strange chain of events. Your return to the high valley in the Swiss Alps with your wife, Laura, and your friends, Mona Williams and Peter Bennett. The maddening sight of Mona in Peter's arms. Laura's possible fall from the rocky ledge. The fall that would have been fatal, Jim, had you not pulled your wife to safety. The irony of the situation twists within you. If Laura had fallen to her death, you'd have her money and Mona. It could have happened so simply, Jim. Yet you stepped into the breach, saved your wife's life, and in that instant, widened the gap between yourself and the two things you want most, Laura's money and Mona. That evening, the four of you were seated in the bar of the inn, toasting Laura's good fortune.
And I always thought that when a person was on the brink of death, his whole life flashed before him.
Oh, and it doesn't?
Oh, no, Peter. All I could think of was darn that flower. Then suddenly there was Jim's beautiful face and his even more beautiful arm hauling me up.
We were just lucky the rest of that ledge didn't collapse.
Even when it was all over, I was still holding my thumbs. Oh. Well, I can joke about it now, but I was terribly frightened. I wonder if you'll ever know how grateful I am, darling.
Sure, Laura. I know.
Well, as the Chinese say, Jim, once you save a life, that life is yours to look after for as long as you live.
See what you got yourself into, darling?
Oh, cut it out. Okay, I was a hero. I saved you. Now forget it.
Why, Jim?
Say, Jim.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. It's just that I guess I'm a little jittery. A delayed reaction or something like that.
I know, darling.
Laura, how about this dance? It's a shame to let music like this go to waste.
All right, Peter. Excuse us? Sure, Laura. Jim and I will sit this one out.
All right, Mona. All right, say something. Don't just stare. You know why I blew up.
I do?
Yes. You're thinking he wishes he hadn't been quite so fast getting down to that ledge to Laura. He wishes...
Jim, that's not true.
But it is true. That's just what I was thinking.
Yes, Jim, the thought stays with you. If you'd have only let Laura fall to her death, it would be all over now. You look down at Laura now, sleeping soundly at your side, her nightmare over and done with. And you wonder if she suspects... If that's why she dreamed that someone was trying to kill her. She didn't say it was you, did she, Jim? But you know it was you in her dream. Early the next morning, you arise without waking Laura. Go down to breakfast. Stefan comes in as you finish, and the two of you go to the storeroom to look over and choose the equipment that you will need for your climb.
Shoo, smells like mothballs and oil.
Yeah, Herr Schmidt takes good care of his equipment.
He's got enough here to start a sporting goods store.
There's plenty of everything here.
Yeah?
You will need crampons, pitons, hammers, rucksacks, water flasks, and rope. Yeah, rope.
Yeah, we couldn't do without the rope, could we, Stefan?
Nein, we could not do without the rope. To a climber, it is often the difference between life and death.
There you are, Jim.
Morning, all.
Have you
Morning,
eaten, Jim?
Oh, hours ago.
Be sociable anyway. Sit down to a cup of coffee.
Well, I can do with a cup at that. Stefan thinks a climb to the upper ridges of the Gray Cloud would be a good climb. We won't try for the top, of course. It would be a little too rugged.
Gray Cloud. Sounds sort of ominous.
Yeah, it's not too tricky, though, Jim. I mean, after all, the girls, Mona especially, hasn't done too much climbing.
I resent that, Mr. Bennett. I'll have you know I'm very good.
Oh, Laura, Jim, I've got wonderful news. Mona's broken down and agreed to set our wedding date for early summer.
Oh, that is wonderful. I'm so glad.
And I was thinking, Jim, I have no brothers or anything like that, and, well, you are our best friend. Will you be my best man? What?
Oh, Jim, did it get on your trousers? Here, take my
hat. No, it's nothing. Nothing at all. Clumsy of me.
You're not getting stage fright already, are you?
No, it's just that I certainly made a mess of this tablecloth.
Well, what do you say, Jim? Okay?
Well, I don't know what to say, Pete.
Look, there's no one I'd rather have. Mona, too, I know. Mona, you ask him in your most irresistible way, please.
Yes. Yes, of course, Jim. I think that would be very, very nice.
You want to leap to your feet, scream that Mona belongs to you, smash everything on the table, don't you, Jim? But you don't. No, you just sit there. Your eyes locked for a moment with Mona's. Go to Peter Bennett. But you don't dare look at Laura, do you, Jim? You're afraid of what she might see in your eyes. All the hate and resentment you feel for her. And you know now what you must do. After breakfast, you hurry to the storeroom. You study the four coils of rappel rope. Select the darkest of the four and go to work. You work slowly and with infinite care. Finally, it's done. You smile. It looks like an extremely stout rope, doesn't it, Jim? Yes. But the full weight of a body, even a body as small and as light as Laura's, would snap it. Darker than the other three coils, it will be a simple matter to make certain that Laura gets this rope. By late the next afternoon, your party is past the timber line. Stefan, who is leading, shouts, points to an arm. The hut is in sight. A small stone shelter built by the Swiss Alpine Club for use for the climbers. In a short time, you're there.
We will camp here tonight.
It's about time.
Softy, I'm as fresh as a daisy. How about you, Laura?
I'm fine. Be glad to get these shoes off, though.
And the only thing that hurts on me is my stomach. Let's rustle up some food.
Sunset the next day, and you reach the second hut. So far, there has been no occasion to use the ropes. You're impatient, aren't you, Jim? You've seen to it that Laura has the dark rope, the one you've cut, that will never support her weight, and tomorrow she'll have to use it. When you start out in the morning, the angle of your ascent steepens, and finally you hit solid rock. You remove your crampons and thread your way up the steep rock till finally you reach it. Solid gray wall of overhanging rock. Stefan pauses and faces the four of you.
It is a bad spot. Something has happened here. It is better that we descend and look for another way around.
But why, Stefan? We can work up to the overhang. There must be some sort of hold beyond it. What do you think, Pete?
Well, maybe we could, but the girls aren't. Laura, do you think that
Oh, yes, yes, I can manage it. Mona, do you... Oh, yes, yes, of course, I can make
it. Well, the eyes have it.
Well, good, I go now. I will lower my rope when I clear the overhang.
We'll be seeing you, Stefan.
Your hand, Herr Jim. Yeah, yeah, up.
Thanks, Stefan. Tougher than I expected. Ah, this wind is bad.
Yeah, it is very bad.
Well, how does it look?
Well, that ledge up there, that is next.
At 100 feet up. Not too steep, though.
We can take it on an angle.
Laura? Laura, you girls okay? You went up there like mountain goats.
I could have done it with one arm tied behind me.
Hold on. Thought sure you'd be blown off.
Me too. That gust hit me hard.
It is best to stay close to the wall.
You said it. There's nothing but space out there.
Well, I ascend now. Herr Jim, you will belay the rope and make it secure.
And the action goes on. Stefan first to ascend, then Peter, and then Mona joins them on the ledge. She waves, the rope comes down. It's time for Laura's ascent, isn't it, Jim? As you reach for the rope to draw it in, the wind's hit with full force and you trip on a loose stone.
Jim!
Your clawing fingers fasten onto the lip of the ledge. You're torn loose, break down the side of the wall and claw about a nub. And hold. And there you cling, transfixed. Below you there is nothing but death. Sweat pours into your eyes. Your blood is a roar in your ears, and you go weak. Manage to look up, and Laura's stricken face peering over the edge.
Jim, thank goodness. Hold on, Jim. Hold on. We'll lower a rope. Lock it around your wrist and arm. I'll belay it. Stefan is on his way down. Hold on.
Hang on, Jim. Laura. Stefan is coming down.
Hang on, Jim. Hang on. Jim, here it comes. My rope. Take it, Jim.
No.
No, Laura. I can't. I can't. Tell Stefan. Hurry. Hurry.
Please, Jim. Take my rope. Take my rope.
No, it won't. Can't hold on any longer.
Jim.
Whistler will return in just a moment with the strange ending to tonight's story. Now, back to the Whistler.
The climbing party makes its descent slowly, silently. Stefan guiding Laura's every mechanical move. She's in a bad state of shock, moves like an automaton. Peter follows behind with Mona, the anguish of the experience written in their faces. Finally, they reach the Alpine hut, put Laura to bed. And after a while, she falls into a deep, exhausted sleep, and her three companions take up a vigil by her bed. Suddenly, the deadly silence of the room is broken.
Jim.
Stefan, is she all right?
It's bad. Very bad. She dreams. It's all right, Mikey. All right.
Such a horrible shock for her. So much to bear.
Jim, you must... Jim? Oh, you, Stefan. It was a dream, wasn't it? All it... No. No dream. He's dead, isn't he, Stefan? Jim's dead.
Yeah. Herr Jim is dead.
Stefan, why didn't he take the rope? Why? He could have been saved. Why?
If it is as you say, Frau Mason, I do not know why. I do not understand. You are sure that this is so?
Yes, he wouldn't take my rope. He tried to say something and then he fell. Why, Stefan, why? We could have saved him.
Yeah. Your rope would have saved him. I do not know why he would not take it.
He seemed afraid. Yes, that's it. It was like he was afraid of my rope.
I do not know why. It was a good rope. All the ropes are good. The night before we left, I go over them all carefully. Ah, and a good thing that I do. One of the ropes I took between my hands and poof, it snapped. So I replace it with a dark one. The one that you carried, Frau Mason. It was a very good rope. It would have held three such men as Herr Jim.
Does it for this episode of the Relic Radio Show. I hope you enjoyed it. You can find a lot more from Theater 5 and The Whistler at relicradio.com. Also, past episodes of this show, our Shoutcast stream, and our donate button. If you enjoy this and all the shows, would like to help support them all, your donations make all of this possible. And thank you, as always, to those who have donated, and thanks for joining me today. Talk again next week with another episode of the Relic Radio Show. The Relic Radio Show is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.